Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, rebel fighters at the Syrian border speak with our correspondent on the scene. Two experts discuss strategy to control ISIS. Presidential candidates do some small-town campaigning in New Hampshire. And we'll hear about the Academy of Country Music Award nominees.
One of the snubs is that there's no more fan voting. So in the past, the ACMs would ask the fans to determine who would win the Entertainer and New Artist of the Year awards, but not anymore.
It's right here on The Voice of America. Syrian rebels in northern Syria have come under intense bombing by Russian warplanes. VOA correspondent Jamie Detmer is in Turkey. He was near the Syrian border, and he joins us now on the line. Welcome, Jamie.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Say, are the rebel forces, are they getting discouraged?
Yes, they are. And I've spoken to several rebel commanders I've known for 3 or 4 years, who are pretty despondent. Many of them are talking about whether the Free Syrian Army, the Western-backed, more secular, less religious-based militias, can hang on. Certainly some of the fighters I've spoken to, and I spoke to one last night, a 20-year-old, who for a quarter of his life has been fighting. He withdrew after 4 days on the battlefront with about 100 others from a militia called Al-Zinki. They came under tremendous airstrikes. He said on the fourth day they were hit with 400 airstrikes, which is a lot. As well as that, they were being hit by all kinds of different ordnance, from cluster bombs to vacuum bombs to barrel bombs to missiles.
In your opinion, is this a turning point in the fighting, or is this a dip for the rebels that they may very well rebound from?
I think it could be a defining moment because I think one of the consequences of this could be that a number of these more moderate militias just implode. They've been having a very hard time really for about 6, 7, 8 months. They rallied in September and October when the military intervention started and put up a tremendous defense, although they still had to rely on some of the more hardliners in these militias and on the Al-Qaeda affiliate Jabhat al-Nusra to stem that original offensive in the autumn. But now they do seem to be in a lot of disarray. Again, they've had to appeal for help from Har al-Sham, which is a hardline Islamist brigade that was partly founded by al-Qaeda people, as well as Jabhat al-Nusra. So one of the things that several observers, analysts, and some of the fighters themselves say is that if we see a number of these militias implode, just disband, some of the fighters will join the bigger Islamist brigades, the more powerful ones, just for self-protection, if for no other reason.
Is there any sign that the coalition or anybody will be able to step in to replace these rebels that are leaving?
It's always been a hard problem in the last year or so to recruit. I remember in the summer a rebel commander saying to me that for every 10 fighters that he lost on the battlefield, he'd be lucky to get 4 to replace them. But then when the Russian intervention started in September, there seemed to be a rallying moment and they were having no trouble in recruitment. But I think that, you know, certainly if the city of Aleppo is completely besieged, and it looks like de facto it is now, and if we see that area north, the north countryside, I think it will be hard to replace them. And I think that what may well happen is that the Free Syrian Army, the more moderate brigade, live to fight another day in the south. They're getting a lot of support from the Jordanians. But in the northern Syria region, I think they're going to have great trouble in recruiting. As I said, I think we'll see a resurgence of some of these more hardline Islamist militias. As a result, I think they're the ones who are going to be able to recruit.
As an eyewitness, what have you seen there along the border?
Well, not as much as I would like. In the same way that the government, the Turkish government, is not allowing refugees in. There are about 25,000, according to the Syrian Red Crescent, who I spoke to this morning. I spoke to the head of mission in Azaz, which is the closest Syrian town to the border. In a way that the Turkish government isn't allowing the refugees in, it's not allowing Western reporters to cross the border into Syria to cover this. So we're covering it really at second hand from people who have illegally crossed the border, fighters and commanders and some civilians as well. Some of them are getting through the border by paying Turkish border guards up to $1,200 per person. Others are sneaking in with the help of smugglers. So we're hearing these accounts from them. We're not getting in. And that is, for me, deeply frustrating, and for my colleagues who are all milling around at the border gate trying to get permission to cross. So we're not seeing very much. We do hear bangs from where we are from time to time. Some heavy airstrikes are only about 20 kilometers away from the border and less. There's a lot of fighting, we know, from our sources, not only involving the regime forces against the Syrian rebels, but also the Islamic State has been taking this as an opportunity to hit some towns quite close to the border as well. And there have been reports of the YPG, which is the Kurdish forces, have been clashing with some rebels over in the enclave that they control called Afrin, and they've captured two or three villages.
Well, thank you very much, Jamie, and you be safe.
Thank you very much.
Time for a look at what's going on the web today, and with a lighter trending topic is social media reporter Andrew Palchevsky. And welcome, Andrew, as always.
Thank you for having me. Well, of course, all through last night and into today, Super Bowl 50, hashtag SB50 is trending. This is the big American football championship.
This is the day in the United States for
the
as far
day.
As football goes.
Unofficial national holiday, as many
yes.
people say. So you have a lot of different things being discussed on social media about the Super Bowl. You start out with Lady Gaga singing the national anthem at the start.
She did very well. I thought it was very tasteful.
Oh, an amazing job. Kudos to her all around on social media. A lot of people giving her a lot of praise, well-deserved. And also praise for her outfit. She wore this very sparkly red suit and had these high heels that one had red and white stripes and one had blue sparkles on it, like kind of like the American flag. So a lot of kudos for her on social media. Then you had the halftime show, hashtag Pepsi Halftime.
That was a big one.
It was a big one. Fitting for the 50th Super Bowl, you had Beyonce, Coldplay, and Bruno Mars all performing and giving a nice flashback to some of the previous performers that have come along for the Super Bowl halftime show. What was interesting on social media, excuse me, was that if you were a Beyonce fan, you liked Beyonce, but the other two you didn't much care for. If you were a Coldplay fan, you liked Coldplay, but the other two were okay. So you kind of see these people go into these buckets based on who they're fans or who they're a fan of.
Kind of like how they do in the balloting for president.
Exactly, exactly. It's pretty similar. And then, of course, the commercials. Two that I want to highlight, hashtag Meet the Ketchups. This was a Heinz ketchup commercial where you had dachshund, little wiener dogs dressed as hot dogs running towards these people dressed in big ketchup costumes and then attacking them and, you know, licking their face. So that was a very cute commercial. And then hashtag monkey puppy baby. Now, this was for...
I saw that. I didn't quite understand it. It looked kind of weird.
It's for a Mountain Dew Kickstart, which combines Mountain Dew soda, fruit juice, and caffeine. So they created this character, which is a dog's head or a puppy's head, a monkey's body, and baby's legs. And it's one of those things that's just so bizarre that it either works or it doesn't, and it really worked for them. It was actually the second top trending hashtag after SB50 last night, and a lot of strong reaction, but it got them talking about the product.
Well, that's the bottom line, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is BOA.
Here's science in a minute.
A new study published in the Nature journal Scientific Reports finds that the behavior of some marine invertebrates who make their home on the seafloor can be affected by the sounds related to human activity. Researchers at England's University of Southampton found that these animals, who play an important role in maintaining marine ecosystems, become less active when exposed to man-made sounds such as those produced by ship traffic or offshore construction activity. Creatures such as langoustines, manila clams, and brittle stars live in burrows they dig in the sediment of the ocean's floor. Creating the burrows and movement into and out of their homes stirs up the seafloor, which is considered vital in recycling nutrients and storing carbon. The researchers say any reduction in the animal's disturbance of the sediment could lead to conditions which could have a negative impact on the area's ecosystem. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said at a recent Rome meeting of the Coalition Against the Islamic State group, Daesh, that the challenge now is to push ahead with a strategy that will work, giving Daesh no time to regroup, no place to run, no safe havens in which to hide. International Edition's Mohamed El-Shenawy discussed what is needed for a more effective global strategy with a couple of experts. Mohamed, what was their assessment of the impact of accelerating the military pressure on Daesh?
They noted that the coalition managed to push Daesh out of 40% of the territory it had gained in Iraq and about 20% in Syria. They said accelerating the military campaign is crucial to curbing Daesh's global ambitions. David Roche, associate professor at Center for Strategic Studies of the National Defense University, explains.
In military movements, momentum builds on momentum. And, Daesh has lost its momentum in Iraq and Syria. And so, you see them trying to expand. Once their progress is arrested and turned back, you're going to see people move away from the organization. The brand will become tarnished.
For Ambassador Alberto Fernandez, former director of the U.S. State Department Center for Counterterrorism Communications, the global strategy has to think about the aftermath of military acceleration against Daesh in Syria.
The question is, what happens in Syria as ISIS is pushed back? Who benefits? Who replaces them? And in other places like Libya, which is becoming the second option for ISIS recruits to go to if they can't make it to Syria and Iraq.
In recent weeks, the Islamic State fighters penetrated several strategic areas on the coast of Libya. How threatening is that development?
Daesh expansion in Libya was highlighted in a final statement of the International Coalition Against Daesh following their meeting last week in Rome. And Professor Deroche pointed out that the continued political division in Libya is a real challenge to any global strategy to contain and destroy Daesh. But Deroche noticed that the Rome statement ignored some root causes of violent extremism, like the political exclusion, the poor governance throughout the region. Deroche said, at the end of the day, poor governance is the magnet for Daesh recruiting. He says that was the case in Syria, Iraq, Libya, and it's now looming in Egypt, where ultra-harsh crackdown is becoming counterproductive.
The Islamic State group has recruited thousands of fighters, relying on its savvy use of propaganda and social media. What did the experts tell you on how to counter its narrative?
They said for a global strategy to counter its message, there is a need for a massive effort by Muslims around the world. Ambassador Alberto Fernandez explains.
You need Muslims who are people of conviction, who are eloquent people in the social media space, challenging the discourse of the extremists. There should be professionals who do that and who actually engage these people and seek to sway them from the path that they've taken.
But Professor Deroche argues that there is a real need not only to challenge the false claims of Daesh on social media, but also use people who have defected from the terrorist group to refute its false claims.
But people who have been involved in social, or who have been involved with Daesh and have seen the reality and then have become disillusioned, those are probably the most powerful voices we can put out there on social media and elsewhere.
Thank you, Mohamed, for this analysis.
Thank you, Sue, for having me.
Coming up on International Edition, local folks get to mix it up with U.S. presidential candidates. And surprises and snubs at the Country Music Award nominations. Candidates seeking their party's nomination for U.S. president have just one last day before a crucial vote in New Hampshire that could be a make-it-or-break-it ballot for some politicians. For decades, presidential candidates have sought out small-town campaign stops to make a personal connection with the voters. And following them in New Hampshire is correspondent Catherine Gibson, who joins us on the line. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Good. Very good.
Well, what have you seen on these stops?
Oh, well, here in New Hampshire, the really important thing for presidential candidates to do is to make that one-on-one, personal, face-to-face connection with voters. The New Hampshire voters are very independent-minded, And they're looking to really see that their values are reflected in the candidates that they're meeting. So the best way to do that is to meet at a general store or a diner and really talk to the candidates and ask them the questions that they want to hear the answers to.
This one-on-one contact, it can really sway up an individual.
Absolutely. I've been talking to a lot of voters here, and they said that it really made the difference to be able to hear that candidate speak, to see them in person, to get a sense of their body language, to just look them in the eye and see, you know, is this the person that I want leading me and representing me in Washington, D.C.?
And it sort of makes them feel like they're important, that this candidate thought enough to come to where they live, to take time to speak to them.
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you how many people said to me, you know, not only does this person, this presidential candidate, care about New Hampshire, they care about my small town. They care about Hooksett, New Hampshire, and Sandown, New Hampshire. They care about just this little group of people. In these cases, we're talking about 20, 30, 50 people. Every single vote counts, and they know that, and that means a lot to them.
Well, what kind of sense are you getting from these civilians about the balloting out there in the small towns? How are they looking at the election?
I think a lot of them wait until the very last minute to make their decision. They really take it seriously and go to all of these candidate events, and they want to see each and every candidate in person before making their decision. And so, you know, the polling is finding that about 50% of New Hampshire voters are still open to changing their mind about a candidate. And, you know, we're in the final hours before the primary.
And I guess a lot of them are excited that in their state they're having the first primary.
Oh, that's a big deal here in New Hampshire, and a lot of people told me that will never, ever change. They take their role very seriously.
Well, thank you very much, Catherine, for sharing all that.
Absolutely. Glad to talk.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The Academy of Country Music Awards, also known as the ACM Awards, is one of the most beloved ceremonies in country music. Recently, the organization announced its ACM nominations for this year's award show, and it has many in country music both surprised and disappointed. VOA Music's Nikki Strong joins International Edition's Sarah Williams to fill us in.
So, Nikki, what are some of the surprises or snubs?
Okay, well, I think a great surprise is Joey and Rory. Now, their journey in the fight against cancer that they have so openly shared with us has had many of us riveted. It's touched our souls. It's inspired much of their music. So to see their work being acknowledged, even as Joey is in hospice, is very heartwarming. One of the snubs is that there's no more fan voting. So in the past, the ACMs would ask the fans to determine who would win the Entertainer and New Artist of the Year awards, but not anymore. Now it's only the industry and country fans voting for those categories is part of what made the ACMs distinctive and different from other award shows. So now country music fans are snubbed. So we're not part of that process anymore.
Well, I understand Blake Shelton wasn't nominated for anything.
I know, not one thing. This was really crazy. So Blake Shelton is the most high-profile country artist, number one. He is a consistent hit maker. He's always charting, and he's just one of country music's favorite vocalists. And he usually hosts the actual show.
Oh.
So this this year he's not hosting. Now, is there a connection there? I really don't think so. Some people have speculated that, you know, people don't appreciate that he dated Gwen Stefani so soon after his divorce from Miranda Lambert. I don't think that's the case as well. But I think it is fair to say that he could have at least been nominated for Male Vocalist of the Year. He has responded to the snub, and he said that he's just happy to have the night off for a change. He doesn't have to be there to win, and he doesn't have to be there to work. So
he doesn't have to get dressed up.
Exactly.
Well, how did the women fare?
Okay, now this is interesting. It's nice to see Jana Kramer and Kelsey Ballerini. They're relative newcomers, but they've both had chart success, and they're nominated in the category Female Vocalist of the Year. So that's nice to see. But one humongous disappointment were that there were no women nominated for Album of the Year. Now, this is crazy because both Kacey Musgraves, Pageant Material, and Ashley Monroe's The Blade were highly regarded by critics. These are great projects. And both of them have been nominated for Grammys in this category, Best Country Album of the Year, but totally ignored by that category in the ACM. So that's really kind of crazy.
Well, speaking of Grammys, they're right around the corner. Any predictions?
I think Chris Stapleton is going to be a big winner. I hope Kacey Musgraves or Ashley Monroe snag one for Album of the Year. I hope. And it would be sweet, I think, if Joey and Rory win in Best Country Duo or Group Performance category. And it would be just in time for their new CD, Hymns, which will be released February 12th.
Thank you, Nikki. The Academy of Country Music Awards air live April 3rd at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on CBS. You can hear music from the aforementioned artists and more on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on social media at VOA Music on Facebook and VOA underscore music on Twitter. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
Thank you.
If I needed you, would you come to me? Would you come to me for to ease my pain? If you needed me, I would come to you. I would swim the sea for to ease your pain.
We would like you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. And if you'd like to listen to our program again or a past program, visit our website at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, recently contributed $20 million to support the provision of food to approximately 1.2 million temporarily displaced persons of the federally administered tribal areas. 75,000 earthquake-affected individuals and 153,500 malnourished women and children in Pakistan. This new contribution by the United States will be managed by the United Nations World Food Program, or WFP, which will mill approximately 40,000 metric tons of wheat provided by the government of Pakistan into fortified wheat flour. In addition, the WFP will purchase and distribute more than 9,000 tons of specialized food commodities to these groups. USAID's $20 million donation is a contribution to the Twinning Program, a partnership among the government of Pakistan, the WFP, and the international donor community. Through the Twinning Program, wheat donated by the government of Pakistan is milled into fortified wheat flour and distributed to vulnerable displaced populations in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province and the federally administered tribal areas. Donor funds are used to cover the costs of milling, fortification, storage, transportation, and distribution of the flour. USAID is the largest international donor to the Twinning Program, and with this latest contribution has now reached $75 million in total support to the program since 2013. The U.S. government is helping Pakistan to improve access to safe and nutritious food for women, men, and children who are vulnerable to malnutrition, USAID Mission Director John Grork said. The United States has a long-standing commitment to working with Pakistan to provide humanitarian assistance and support human development.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.